And a pleasant Wednesday evening, everybody tuning in to this week's episode of the Harness Players Podcast. Edison Hatter here, hosting this week's show to talk us through, a couple different things. I am back in the States, so we'll talk a little bit of Sweden talk. Garnet Barnsdale is back up in Canada to my south there. He was down in the States for the Stables Open House. We'll talk a little about the stable. And we'll also, of course, discuss this weekend. Mike Probosi, I hear there might be some eliminations. There might be a big race next Saturday coming up north of the border.
Few big races, but that North America Cup's looking very juicy, and lots of nice ones coming in this year. Three eliminations, so we'll talk about that tonight, and a few other stakes they might have planned at Mohawk for next weekend.
Garnet Barnsdale, I'm just going to call it the North American Cup now and get my one error out of the way and ask for forgiveness for it.
Well, everybody's allowed one, but I mean, you better not say it again.
All right, John Rallis is already tuned in. That doesn't take very long. That's always good when he's here for the Chanel bags. Yeah, Mike, we're always intrigued. I think there's only one. There's a new one there, Mike, to your right. So you're buying even more. You must be giving out good
ones. I don't know if there's any new ones, but believe me, if there was, she'd be happier than she is already.
All right, well, let's see. Where do we want to start? Well, Mike, 2 weeks ago, I was, of course, overseas. We saw the big race over there, the Elite Lop, as well as several of the other races on that big weekend. An exciting weekend. We'll be back next week with some more analysis for the Norrbotten Store Prix up at Boden, nearly the Arctic Circle, the race in the midnight sun next Saturday. So a big Saturday of watching that action in the early afternoon, transition to North America Cup on the evening. But Mike, Elite Lop weekend, what'd you make of it?
Oh, I loved it. That was just great racing. I thought that the podcast we put together was really good. And you know, just the crowd over there, I thought was fantastic. I really enjoyed watching you on the coverage, especially on Saturday there. And I thought the racing was great. That the betting was very good. And you had a chance to make a little money if you paid attention over there. Just the right horses, I thought, won. Just a fantastic weekend of racing. Really, I can't say enough about it, how much I really enjoy the Swedish racing. If you're not plugged into that, tied into that, I think it's worth pursuing. It's a lot of fun, and they really just love harness racing over there, and I love that. So,
well, Garnet, you admittedly don't follow as much as Mike, but you at least had the Ray Catolo comment of, if you were going to bet a horse, you just got to bet one named Horsey Dream, the French invader who won this year's big race.
Right, Horsey Dream. I mean, everybody's got a Horsey Dream. I had Horsey Dreams on the weekend going to see my filly qualify.
And that was a nice win, Eric Raffin for trainer Pierre Belroche. It's funny, Mike, I was sitting there with some of the friends that you know from ATG up on the balcony enjoying their big party, and was talking to them before the big race. And I said, you know what, I guarantee you one thing. Your winner is one of two horses. It's actually guaranteed to be Horsey Dream, because the other French horses, Matthew Abrevard, Ramon Deroux, they're all actually pretty decent English speakers. Raffin does not speak a word of English. Pierre Belroche is iffy. So I turned to them and said, look, they say they're pulling the shoes. Pierre Belroche sounds very confident. I can guarantee you that this thing is going to win. So, Mike, I mean, I said it before the race happened.
You knew. I think you should have bet more than you may have did. And now, what happened too with the eliminations? The big favorite had a lot of trouble in the elimination. I ended up breaking it right after the start. You raced an amazing race, but didn't qualify for the final. And, so that opened things up, I think, for Horsey Dream for the final. And, the big favorite, Francesco Zet, really didn't fire there in the final also. And, so a lot of things happened to make it set up. But the winner was phenomenal, went a 49 and 2 mile. To put that in perspective, I said this on the newsletter, if you read that last week, there's only been one mile in the U.S. on a 5/8 mile track that has gone that fast, and that was Sebastian Kay back at Pocono many years ago. So that shows you how fast that race went and how good those horses are. I mean, it was just unreal.
Yeah, Garnet, it was a really fast track for the weekend. The two things that should really stand out is 108 flat final time. That's, of course, the kilometer speed, the European timing. So yeah, 149 and 2, as we would say here in the States, for the mile rate. an incredible mile there. But Garnett, even more impressive to me at least, Saturday, I've always advocated for this type of a system in the States. There was a two-mile race, nearly 3,200 meters, and they had an accident occur nearly a mile and a half into the race. And in Swedish and Scandinavian racing, they put on a stoplight. The driver stopped, they pull up the horses, and they come back and rerun the race. Because they got so far into the race, if they get over 50% of the race done, the rule is they've got to wait an hour. So they waited an hour. They brought these horses back. They went 2 miles again, and they set a race record. And this has been a historic race, the Harper-Hanover race, but it's been going on for many decades. So if that's not advocation for, you know, we should have a similar system in the States to avoid accidents like that, I don't know what is.
Wow, that's a lot to digest what you just said. I can't believe you said that they called the race off and came back and raced it again. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, you know, the key is getting it stopped as soon as possible and mitigating any kind of danger for sure. So that sounds like a really good system.
Yeah. And Mike, to spend 30 seconds on that race, as you were listening and watching, I said it on the feed, obviously from the studio there in Stockholm, but you know, it was very good to see Benjamin Rochard and Izouard Verdiquet come back to win the Harper Hanover, because he was clearly ready to cruise in the first elimination or the first time around. And it's good that he still won the second one. High on Pepper, Jorma Kontio was able to make that move earlier, though, the second time around. I think he was the real benefactor of that restart. And I think the real loser was Bjorn Goop. I think Bjorn's horse was traveling beautifully the first time around and got a little unlucky the second time. In fact, I asked Bjorn about that on Sunday morning, and, you know, he was a little disappointed. But, you know, he said that is racing and obviously, you know, unfortunate. But I think he was kind of the loser of the restart. I think the winner was High on Pepper, and Izouard Verdiquet was the winner no matter what.
Yeah, that favorite was massive, and I think the restart only benefited. I mean, he was going to win anyway, but it only benefited him. I mean, he probably could have won four or five races, and he was just that much better than that group of horses. But you're right. I mean, the other horse that was traveling very well in that first one ended up making a break in the second one, and you know, that is unfortunate, but I do think that they did it fair. And there were some horses that scratched and didn't come back and race in that second one too. So that was another thing. But in the US, I don't know that they would have done that. I don't think that would have happened. And so, I mean, a lot of their rules over there don't apply over here. I do think they have a lot of good ideas over there. And I mean, there was a lot of betting. There was a huge pick seven pool that day that hinged on that race. I mean, there was a lot of things going on. And then what are they going to do? Bring those horses back for the next day? So I don't know. I think ultimately it worked out. But
you know, it's funny. There were some trainers and connections that wanted to come back and run the race the next day. But I think what they did made a lot of sense. You know, horse already warm. Just keep them warm and just go around again. But so, Garnett, that big race we were discussing was one of the circular start races. You know, Europe, of course, has those circular starts. French circular starts are very different than Swedish circular starts, though. Swedish races, you have to stay. If you're horse one, you get lane one. Horse two gets lane two. You know, it's pretty straightforward. In French racing, it's kind of chaotic. When you spin, you just establish your lane and go. And as long as nobody disturbs anybody, they go. So I tell you, the discussion all week in the Swedish media was regarding Benjamin Rochard, how well he could handle that circular start in Sweden. The answer is he handled with flying colors. But what I'm going to say to you about circular starts is, it's funny, I turned to John Campbell last year when we were sitting at Sovala together and said, you know, it'd be kind of fun if we did races like this in the States. And he turned to me and was like, absolutely not. Can you imagine the Hamiltonian with five or six recalls because of a circular start? The people just don't have the patience for it in the States. That's probably true.
Yeah, that would be pretty wild. It's pretty interesting to watch that. It's, you know, it's a spectacle to see that, especially if you don't see it very often. But yeah, for sure. I don't think we'll see it in the States anytime soon.
All right. Well, last thing I have to say on Swedish racing for the weekend, Mike, you've already heard this. Well, Mike, you're our producer. You're in charge of us. What's our rating? Can I go to, like, I don't know, PG-13? Is that acceptable?
At least. Yes.
I think you know where I'm going with this because yes. You know exactly what I'm going to say, Mike. Garnett, you probably haven't heard this before. Veikko Haapakangas from Finland won two of the major races this weekend. Big deal for him to win two races in the V75. That's kind of their big pick seven. They put their best races in there. So big deal for him as a young trainer. He'd only won one before. He won two in upsets on the weekend. Okay in English. Our reporter asked him in English, Veikko, you won these big races. What does this mean to you? He said, oh, this best time I've ever had with my pants on.
He said some other things too.
But, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's my new favorite quote of all time. We're gonna have to figure out how to use that one at some point. But all righty, so we got some other stuff to discuss, although I will say Justin Turnbull's turning in and he is looking forward to the limbs this weekend, as I think we all are. I know he's been down to the Hamiltonian before, been to a lot of the big races. I think he's earning a little bit of calling up there in Canada too, doing a great job with all the stuff that he's doing. Kevin Plouch, another one of the youngsters. You know, Mike, it's I always feel like I'm young, but it, you know, everybody watching is younger than me, where it feels like. So I guess I'm just getting old. Kevin Plouch wants to know how I had 10,000 and not in the Oak Grove not wagering event. Kevin, I meant to text you this earlier. I will tell you right now and tell everybody else in the universe, the action we have right now, it is a futures wager on NCAA softball. It is Oklahoma on the futures, and they are up 4-1 still, I think. Oh, 5-1 now in game one of three and then the championship series. So we're going to try to bring that home in the next couple of days. But all right, enough about me, enough about Sweden. Garnett, let's hear from you. You were down south of the border out at Northfield. I think a little bit of potentially rainy weather, but hopefully a good time for you as an owner catching some of the stables open house.
Yeah, the rain didn't really dampen anybody's spirits, except for maybe the drivers, right, who were covered in mud by the end of the day. But as far as the owners, I'm trying to figure a way how to put this in the words. I guess they're into their eighth year now, right? And they started from nothing, Anthony and Amy. And, you know, probably the pitcher that best kind of shows, you know, what it was all about of the pictures that I took came Sunday after the races in the rain, where there had to be 50, 60, 70 people in the barn with their horses, right? And you see people of all ages walking around with big bags of carrots and big bags of treats. And that drives home that with the stable or with any kind of, it doesn't matter what percentage you own, right? It doesn't matter. You still feel like you own that horse. And if you give me a minute, I'll read off the feedback that I gave Anthony on when I got home. So basically, my son Nick and I, better known as Ace, we arrived on Friday in Ohio, and Anthony saw one of my tweets and said, come on over to the barn tomorrow. So we went over to the barn Saturday morning. We were pretty excited to see. This is the first time I'm seeing a couple of the horses that I have share ownership in. It didn't take us long at all to be impressed by the staff, because as soon as we walked in, we got, hi, how you doing? What horses do you want to see, right? So right away, they engaged us. Also, we saw Amy. She met us with a big smile. So they asked which horses we want to see and pointed us in the right direction. The friendly caretaker that's working with Aunt Lily, who's one that I own a good percentage of, offered us some treats to give the horse. So that made, you know, both the horse and the filly and us happy. Our Saturday visit was totally enjoyable. We got to watch, there's a little stand there at the top, at the very top of the stretch, almost in the clubhouse turn. It's a little old wooden stand that's got a bunch of levels of benches. And we just sat there and watched horses train for about half an hour. There's a breeze coming. You know, that's one of those things. I think Winston Churchill said there's something about the outside of a horse is good for the inside of a man. I actually thought about that quote sitting there, because it was just so cool kind of watching, right? So Sunday morning for the qualifiers, we arrived for the breakfast, and I was really impressed with the food that they served. They had, you know, really good scrambled eggs, sausage, tasty potatoes. Listen, you could have put out powdered eggs there and nobody would have cared, right? But no, they went the whole mile and gave out some really good food to the owners. It was enjoyable. You know, watching the babies qualify was another impressive display. I mean, most of these babies hadn't seen the gate, right? They're seeing it for the first time. They're going in the rain. It was raining the whole time, lightly most of the time, but still, you know, the track's deteriorating a little bit, and they all behaved incredibly well. I think only a couple of them broke, and they qualified like 26 of them. So, you know, the results of those qualifiers kind of speak for themselves, how well prepared the horses were. And once again, following the races, we went to the barn, interacted with some fellow owners, some that I chat with on Facebook that I never met. So that was kind of cool. You know, it was just heartwarming to see so many owners in there, you know, interacting with the horses and their fellow owners and stuff. The whole weekend was just a really great success. The rain did not put a damper on it, not for me and not for anybody, I don't think. They had a video feed produced by Curtis McDonald, of course, featuring Mark McKelvey, Mike Carter, Fred McDonald. That was top notch. Mike even let me call one. I screwed up a little bit in the stretch, but I'm going to blame it on the angle. I've never seen that angle before, and I didn't have a video feed to cheat with a little bit. So I did manage to correct myself and catch the right winner at the wire at least. So, but listen, I mean, like I said, the whole thing, it was just phenomenal. And I plan on going back again next year. And, you know, I'm probably going to buy into another Ohio bred, and that's part of the experience.
How much ownership do you have now with them?
I own pieces of three. Only one of them actually only one of them qualified Aunt Lily, and she did very well. She was 203. She was a winner with a 29-1 last quarter over that track, so she looks pretty good. And I got a piece of Pelican Al, Charlie May's brother. He's turned out. He got a little bit sore. I think they're going to have him back going in July. Mm-hmm. And I got a piece of a filly named Leggy, a What the Hill filly. She's got a leg injury, so she may lose her whole season this year. But it's not career threatening. So pretty good, decent pieces in all of them.
Now, what was the barn like? You said you went over to the barn and things. Were there other people over there, and did they have sort of things for those people?
Yeah. The two barns that I walked through were all of their horses, but mm-hmm. I mean, anybody probably could have went in and out of there. Yeah, you know, it's like I said, the grooms were so friendly and helpful, and you can tell that they really understand what Anthony and Abby are trying to do, right? It wasn't fake. They seemed happy to see people and stuff. So I told Aunt Lily's groom I give wind tips over and above what the stable gives. So get in the winner's circle.
We had Anthony on the show last week, and you know, just kind of a preview of his open house, and I think that he presented maybe he under presented from the sounds of what you're delivering here as far as what the experience was, because maybe he undersold given the fact that you were there and you think that it was just fantastic, you know, the whole way around.
Yeah, like I said, the only drawback was the weather, but that didn't seem to bother anybody. It's not like, you know, the qualifiers ended and everybody's like, oh, we got to get out of here because of the weather. They all wanted to go over and see their horses and interact with their horses. And that's one of the really cool things about it, is they welcome that, right? Like, I was pretty happy when he sent me that tweet on Friday and said, come to the barn tomorrow morning. So I show up in the barn with a bunch of donuts and muffins. So they were probably nice. Happy to see me. Hopefully they'll remember me next time I come. But, you know, it's good to – yeah, it was – And I think most people probably share my feelings on the experience. It was just a tremendous weekend.
He talked about like a lot of that camaraderie with the owners, and you know, that he's almost like he feels like he's almost not even selling the racing anymore. It's more the you know, almost like you guys are all rooting for the same team. I said, like, he's like a almost like a general manager of a franchise, that, you know, he's trying to build the best team and you know, present it to the fans. And that's pretty much his role now and what he's evolved into.
Yeah, there's definitely some of that. Honestly, I don't know how he does everything he does, because I watch all his videos, and even ones unrelated to my horses, and he's going everywhere all the time. Like, he's going from Ohio to Pennsylvania to back to Ontario because his kid's got a baseball game, back to Ohio, back to Pennsylvania. And while he's doing all that, he's making these videos at every stop, right? So, Father Time's undefeated, but hopefully he can keep going like this for another 10 or 20 years, because what he's doing is phenomenal.
Mike, I think it's consistent through everybody we have on the show, especially regarding the stable. I'm thinking Garnett particularly, along with Laura Brower. You know, a lot of those owners always speak so highly of the experience. I think that's a real positive for obviously what Anthony McDonald does, no question about it. But what I really took away from everything Garnett said is, whenever Garnett gives a food recommendation, I really listen. I don't know about you, Mike. So we got to get an invite to one of these stable breakfasts. That's what I'm hearing.
You can go to these. It's an open house for a reason.
Well, Mike, I'm picking you up on the way. We'll take the road trip together, and we're going to the next one in Ohio.
I'm in.
Northfield Park, their chef is terrific, because I ate there last year at the Battle, and the food they serve there is great. All the time, but they don't open that dining room up very often. I think they only have it open a couple nights a year for the biggest races.
And the Battle's this weekend too, and that's quite the field. So
is it ever? Yeah,
yeah. That's going to be a nice race. Too bad. I mean, we're not contractually obligated to speak about it, but just from off the cuff, that's probably the best field of horses this year, especially on a half mile track.
So far, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Well, speaking of stuff we will discuss before we get into our Woodbine coverage, you know, I got to go the lightning round of like 58 things to ask about this week. So Garnett, we'll start with you. I'm going to kind of lightning round through everything here. Celtics or Mavs?
Mavs.
All right, Mike?
I don't care.
You never have any NBA good advice for us. I think the Celtics.
Mavs in six.
I know a lot of people are taking the Mavs. I like the Celtics. Mike, you at least follow hockey more. Panthers, Oilers?
Florida for me, just because I want to see McDavid struggle a little more before he wins.
Garnett?
I was going to say Oilers until their coach was asked about playoff experience, and he said, ask the Buffalo Bills how that works out. So now I'm going to go to Florida. He can, you know what he can do.
You're Canadian. How can you root against a Canadian team?
It's not the Olympics. It's not the Olympics. I don't care. It's professional sports. Yeah. It's not my Canadian team.
That's true.
I've never understood that. I never bought into that.
Are you a Leafs fan or yeah?
Yeah, casual. I couldn't be a diehard Leafs fan and Bills fan. I couldn't take that every year. Double dose of that. I want them to win, but it doesn't kill me if they don't.
No action invested for me, but I saw a little Twitter discussion earlier this morning between the announcer at Century Mile and the announcer at Gulfstream Park, and the loser apparently has to say when the horse is coming down to the stretch of the big length lead, this horse won as easily as Edmonton won the Stanley Cup. So I hope to hear Pete Aiello say that, so I'll take Edmonton. Mike, this weekend, Beaumont Stakes, anything at Saratoga, anything catching your eye?
That's going to be phenomenal. It's a great weekend, 4 days. It starts tomorrow. And I briefly looked over Saturday. There's some nice races there. Matt Mile came up a little bit of a short field. So, but I think the Belmont's very intriguing. There's not going to be a big favorite in that race. And I don't know really. I don't have a pick currently, but I think there could be a fair amount of speed. And I know Mystic Dan keeps getting perfect trips, but he's a horse that I think is going to be in the try again. Like he just keeps finding ways to kind of, be right there at the finish. So he's okay for me. Sees the Gray. I think if he can get the front, he's dangerous and he's going to be a price again. He's proven he can beat some of these horses before. I'm sort of against Sierra Leone. I know he might be the best horse and now he gets Pratt, but I don't know. Closing from way back at Saratoga going that far is just, that's not a recipe for success ever that I have ever seen. So I want horses close.
Garnett, this is the joy of gambling. We're entitled to differing opinions. I love Sierra Leone this weekend, although I am curious. I saw at least some people that I don't necessarily respect, but at least some discussion on the internet. 4-5? Sierra Leone can't be that short, right?
Mm-mm. Oh, chance. Yeah, no chance.
Give me the 9-5, 2-1 morning line.
Maybe 8-5. Maybe 8-5. That's the lowest.
2-1 we'll take. Garnett, your thoughts?
I agree with Mike. I'd bet against him. I actually hit the try in the Derby, keying him to finish second or third. Now,
yeah.
I almost lost.
I did
lost.
Too. Same thing.
I almost lost, thing. But that was my only opinion on the race. This guy's going to clunk up. He's going to be too late. He's going to finish second or third, and I made good money doing that. I hope it doesn't rain. God, please don't rain these races off the turf. There's so many big races on the turf. That being said, if it does rain, I'd probably be on Seize the Gray. But other than that, I haven't looked at the PPs yet, so I don't have a big opinion on it. I pray it doesn't rain because I want to get involved in some of these grass races.
All right. Well, before we turn the page, Garnett, anything else you want to share? I mean, Battle of Lake Erie, there's the NCAA softball, NCAA baseball, the U.S. Open golf next week. Anything at all?
I think the Battle of Lake Erie, the battle's going to be interesting because Line Drive Hanover has to go from the one hole. He has to, right? And Hullabaloo, I mean, they're going to leave 1-2. Is Desperate Man going to close the hole and then we're going to get some action from the second tier? Desperate Man from the second tier closing the pocket off. It's such a good field. Like, it's too bad Charlie May drew the 7-hole, but he's won a big race there coming from off the pace before, right? I think he won the
Mills. I think he might be coming out, though, so he might not go.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Other than that, no. We're going to talk about it, obviously, but this North America Cup looks like it could be one of the best fields they've had for it in a long, long time. I mean, we don't know how it's going to shake out, but when you look at how many potential killers are in these eliminations, man, it's going to be wild.
All right, Mike, here I'm going to take a stab at absolutely everything. Tennessee baseball probably wins. We've got the Oklahoma softball futures action. NCAA track and field takes place this week. Texas men, Florida women. We've got the Battle of Lake Erie going on, and we'll discuss probably some racing stuff later on. U.S. Open next week. Bryson DeChambeau at 20-1. And I don't know, Mike. Anything else you want to know?
I don't know. Did you fire the golf bet already?
Not yet. We'll wait till after this weekend.
You wait till the softball cashes, and then
we'll take that money, go from there. There is a live tournament this weekend. There is, of course, the Memorial at Jack's Place in Ohio. We can take one more week to take a peek at how golf's going. Maybe Scotty gets arrested again. We got to make sure Scotty's even playing. But I might want to get that bet in soon, because he's the heavy favorite. I guess if he gets taken out of the pools, the prices change. But regardless, we got 35 minutes left, so that's a good point to turn our attention to the Mohawk racing. Although, Mike, my mom seems very concerned about the 10,000. You can put that up there. There we go. Yeah. See, Kevin was lowballing. It was probably more like 30,000, 40,000. Who knows how much we had in that pool.
I'm going to make that race.
What was that, Mike?
That's a non-wagering event?
All non-betting race, right? Actually, you know what? The worst one I saw, or maybe best, worst, whatever you want to say it was, today at Delaware Park, Alpha Star What's one to not? I can't believe they entered that horse in a stakes race. Like everybody else scratched. Nobody else won the race horse. Four horse fields, 1-20 jogged. I'm not sure what the final total pool was, but at least heading towards the gate, there was like over $100,000 in place money on the horse and like, you know, just absolutely jogged. But anyway, race number three on Saturday, 357. That's our eliminations this year. Garnett, second year in a row, it's come up pretty strong. Last year was, I forget the exact final number, but at least four eliminations worth. This year, three eliminations worth. I think two eliminations worth 2 years ago. So a pretty good last 2 years for the North America Cup.
Yeah, for sure. The interesting thing to me about this elimination is I'm pretty sure there's going to be, if not a very fast early pace, a solid pace, because of the three horse being in this race. Clever Cody, he only knows one way, right? He's going to go out there. He's going to go out there. He's going to want the front. And you got a few, you know, you got a couple others that you got to figure are going to leave in here. Captain's Quarter is probably leaving, Captain Albano. So, you know, these races are very tricky to try and get a winner, but I landed on Gem Quality here. I think this is a perfect spot for him to probably tuck in fourth or fifth and move first or second over. He's done nothing wrong since he won the Breeders' Crown at two last year. And from post eight, you know, you might get a bit of a price on him. So I'm going to go with him.
Interesting, Mike. I don't know about you. I personally was surprised the way they bet that race down at Philly on before Memorial Day. I was overseas, so admittedly, I didn't exactly get a chance to watch it live. But Captain Albano versus Gem Quality, I'm surprised at the prices they were in the end. Obviously, Captain Albano did end up winning. Gem Quality, the upset winner of the Breeders' Crown last year, outside post tonight. What did you think, Mike?
Yeah, I watched that replay, and Captain Albano definitely held safe there. I don't think that really Gem Quality was any threat. Now, get the bigger track here. But, you know, I do think maybe has to find a little bit against that one. But it's an elimination. So there's that. You know, Captain's Quarters is in this race. I would think that, you know, it's a home game for him. He found a way to win the Metro last year, won two out of five races. But made the big races count. I do think, though, Nijinsky looked a little better than him last week. But again, everything's prepping into this race. So maybe they weren't showing their best for some of these, you know, sire stakes and these, you know, Sun Beach Somewhere type $80,000 races when you got $1 million race in 2 weeks. So the cream's going to rise. I was interested in Clever Cody some. I do think, like, his Metro was solid last year. The races this year, I think, are very good. Just throw out that race where you had the broken equipment. Just completely get rid of that race. He was ended up a refund in that race. So that's, you know, you can ignore that. They go to Northfield and get a nice little paycheck at 1-9 there for $90,000 race. This horse is solid. I think that he's going to be overlaid because you have some studs in here. You have the Captain Albanos, you have the Captain's Quarters, you have the Gem Quality. So he's going to get lost. I know he's going to be forward in the race. I'm not sure if Miller's maybe the best driver for him necessarily, but you know, he knows how to win this race. It's going to be interesting. I do think he's the value, and Ivy Park's not, you know, terrible. He raced in those races at Pocono and Philly against Rush In, who's very, very good this year. Captain Albano, you know, just was ahead away from him. So he's another one that's going to get lost in the board. And the elimination, I'm interested in Clever Cody, Ivy Park, and then I'm going to try to beat Captain's Quarters. I would probably use Captain Albano. Those would be my three if I was trying to get through Maltese in the race.
So that is race through. Oh, I didn't give my own thoughts, did I? I thought to my head. I didn't say them. Captain Albano, Captain's Quarters, Gem Quality, the three shortest prices. Captain Albano's for sure the one that I'd be looking towards. But I agree with you, Mike. You know, I'm curious to see what the betting board looks like on Saturday. I know we say it a lot in the show, but, you know, it's kind of the way you got to do it, right? We got to see what it looks like when they come on the track. What are these final odds going to sell out at? But I think Clever Cody is really intriguing. I mean, you know, he might not have danced some of the biggest dances last year, but, I mean, you really can't fault any race he's had. I mean, right, I draw a line to the broken equipment, left two back. But besides that, I mean, you know, good third, I thought, in the Metro. The easy check last time out. Nothing he's done particularly wrong. So if the price is right, I think he's worth a shot. Too short of a number, though, I don't think it's worth it on him. But, you know, somewhere between Captain Albano or Clever Cody for me, see what those prices look like when we get to post time for race three. And I guess I should clarify our talking points here. So 357 on Saturday night, North America Cup eliminations, races 4 and 8, the Fan Hanover eliminations. That's the three-year-old Philly Pacers. And other things you should pay attention to this weekend that we won't discuss on this show, particularly Friday. Friday's card includes eliminations 2, the Good Times on Friday, a race 2 and 6, and that is the one for the three-year-old trotters. And then the older pacers, and the roses are red, those eliminations races 3 and 8. And last but not least, the Armbro Flight eliminations also on the Saturday card. They will go as races 2 and 6. So that's a lot of elimination coverage to look at this weekend. And, you know, Mike, I think it's another one of those great weekends. We'll have to do a little bit of sleuthing. I'm sure like Greg Reinhardt or somebody on social media will get this in before us. But I get the suspicion we're going to see north of the border, Dexter's, Yannick's, all those guys, Friday, south of the border, Saturday morning, baby race qualifiers, first baby breakfast, baby Meadowlands. Back up Saturday night. That their lives are very exciting this time of the year.
Yeah, they gotta get down and get on those 2 year olds. They did make mention of that earlier this week on Twitter. I think Greg was the one that did. But hopefully the weather cooperates too, because you never know. Things kind of get a little crazy. Maybe they don't get to where they need to be. So, but those, you know, they're the best for a reason, and they got to be behind the best stock. And now the 2 year olds are starting to crank up, so won't be long. We'll be looking at stakes races for them too.
I got to say, Garnett, I think the toughest one, in my opinion, that they do doubles like this all the time, I think the one that I joined them on last year for the Adios followed by the Hamiltonian Limbs, I think that might have been the toughest one because, you know, late Meadowlands racing Friday night, wake up early Saturday morning, get to Teterboro, fly out to the Meadows, race in the big, you know, $350,000 Adios, then fly back. You're already exhausted. And, oh, look, here's possibly some of the biggest drives of the year, the Hamiltonian and Oaks eliminations.
Yeah, you make a good point about fatigue, right? But you know, I think these guys are used to it. I'm sure they know they're drinking energy drinks or eating oranges or something to keep their energy up, because it doesn't seem to affect them in the races. They still do their job well.
Well, race number 4 we'll move to here on Saturday. That's the first.
Do we want to stick with the eliminations? Just go with the NA Cup first.
Yeah, I was debating one or the other. If you want to jump in and go that way, sure, we'll do that. So let's go to race 5 then. Let's go to the second North America Cup elimination. And we have a legendary Hanover here. Well, Garnett, speaking of travel, not a whole lot of travel for this one at least. There's one of the Canadian locals, 6-5 on the morning line over Funtime Bayama, who's another local horse there, the second choice at 7-2.
Yeah, legendary Hanover would probably be one of my few singles on this card. He was just conservatively driven, with, you know, prepping for this race. Pays the 52 and one back half in the Sun Beach somewhere. You can be sure he's not going to be 8 lengths back at the half Saturday night. And I think he's one of the 2 or 3 best horses in this entire these whole eliminations. And I think he turns the tables on Funtime Bayama. I don't think you know, it's go time. You win, and you draw between post 2 and 6, right? You're guaranteed to draw from 2 to 6. So winning is important in these races. I don't think they're not going to leave as much as you can in the tank as possible, but you want to win. And I think that's going to be the difference between this week and last week is intent. And I think Legendary Hanover is the best horse. So I'm not going to go against him in this race.
Mike, I know it's something we talk about a lot, and it's a little frustrating, I'm sure, in the sport, and especially for anybody listening out there that might not be a regular harness player. When you look at that recent line, it looks like Legendary Hanover got, you know, pretty well beaten at 1-9 last time out by Funtime Bayama, and now you're going to get this big price discrepancy the other way on Saturday night. But as Garnett's kind of alluding to, there's probably a reason for it. Obviously, they were prepping for the spot for Legendary Hanover this week, and of course, even more so for next week. So you probably do kind of expect the flip result potentially on Saturday night.
It was just strange. You know, that I was on last week's show. I said, you know, I didn't think Legendary Hanover could lose that race just because how good he had looked up into that point. And then somehow from the 6th hole, he ends up 8 lengths back and have to, you know, come flying 25-3 on a horse that can fly up front of him. And this happened to him last year too. Well, you're not catching Funtime Bayama when he comes home 26-1. It's just not going to happen. And so I don't know. It was very curious, and I don't know what to do now, because I thought for all the world that he looked like the best horse going into this race. And then after that, now, you know, you can make all the excuses you want. Oh, we weren't trying this and that, whatever. But I don't know. That looked like a chink in the armor to me a little bit. And now they have to deal with Captain Luke, who I know is racing numbers of 3 races, but this horse won the Governor Cup last year. And, you know, it's no slouch. He just won a nice race on May 25th at Meadowlands, where he's facing horses like Remember the Alamo. Number Cruncher came out of that race to crush whenever coming up here. Has 25, a sub-26 final quarter speed. Was able to win from the 10 hole to Meadowlands. And now that he's thrust into this race, You know, you got Scotty Z back. I mean, he won this race last year. So he's a problem, I think, for these other two horses. And it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes, because it's not going to be just those two in here. And, you know, Fun Time's been very good, but I don't know. I don't know how the race shape's going to go. I don't know how the intent and what Legendary is going to do. What, you know, the early moves whenever in the overnight races looked fantastic. Now, last week they sat, he's 1-9 and he gets beat, you know, pretty easily. So I don't know. I don't know what to do with this race. I think Legendary will be the favorite, but there's some other horses in here that can make this race interesting. And you know, Fun Time's going to go. So they're going to have to beat him. And you're still going to, if you like him, you got 4-1 last week. You probably get 3-1 here.
Yeah, another race where I'm curious to see what the final odds are. But if Legendary's price goes up enough of that last line, I would happily come back with him. I agree there's maybe a couple question marks, but I don't think they're more than 6-5, 7-5 kind of question marks. I think he's shorter than that, though. So that's where I think this race kind of becomes difficult, honestly. I mean, if it's playing the multis, I would agree Legendary Hammer is probably a single, but not like my favorite single ever. I'm not as confident, I don't think, as Garnett. But I don't know. Before we turn the page on this, just because I feel like we have the discussion every year, so let's start it early in the year and have it. Garnett, I think most people can agree elimination racing is not ideal, perhaps everything else, but is there really anything we can do? I mean, if you were commissioner, do you have some theoretical proposal of how we solve things?
No, but I think when you have three eliminations and three winners that potentially can guarantee a good post, I think it makes it more competitive, right? When you can have a 10-horse field. I don't have a perfect solution to it. I would caution people that maybe you don't want to bet a lot of your bankroll in these races, because, you know, like Mike said, what drive are we going to get this week, right? That's always a question mark. What drive are we going to get this week? Some will have the intent that they're all out to win, and some might not, right? And we're not 100% sure until the gate opens. But we know that for going for $1 million next week, we know that they all want to leave as much as the tank in the tank as possible, winning or not winning.
I do think the three eliminations helps a lot, because you got to be top three to make the final, or the fastest fourth, you know. But that makes a big difference. Two eliminations, you could be fifth and still be in the final. I mean, we saw that in Breeders' Crown last year, where you got some real conservative drives, and I think you would get that again. Whereas now, the three eliminations helps a lot. And this race is not easy. I mean, we didn't mention other horses like Mirage Hanover is a nice horse that's shipping up, that has some quick times. And, you know, you have T-Trick. Yeah. I thought Number Cruncher was, that was a really nice race last time. He's improving. He's another interesting horse. Newsroom was good early last year. So these other horses, there's no guarantee. This is no cakewalk to this final at all. This is not an easy elimination whatsoever. So, you know, if you get that same drive on Legendary, somehow they missed the final. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I do think he's very solid, very good, but, you know, there can be no screwing around here.
Right.
Well, Mike, I think I said it last year for the first time, and I'll say it again this year on the show. You know, everything for me goes back overseas. How about the Swedish method? You know, elimination winners get to pick first. And I like the idea of picking your pose, too, because, look, at the end of the day, I'm determined the French, like Etonaut, when he won the Elite Lop 2 years ago, I'm determined even if they would have finished better, they would have picked post 7 or 8. They just wanted that horse out there. So if that's what you want and you win this elimination for, you know, some ungodly reason, you won post 9 or post 10 for some reason, I think you should get it, you know? You won the elim. Let's have it, you know? So I vote for that. And then, you know, the second place finishers can pick their post next, followed by third. So that's incentive to be second over third. I don't know. Is there anything wrong with that system, Mike?
I love that system. I think it's superior to the one we have now. So
yeah, just to clarify, for this race, I'm pretty sure this is how it works. The three winners go in a draw. The first number out gets to pick what post he wants between 2 and 6, right? Mm-hmm. And then the second guy, and then it kind of goes from there. I think it goes through the second and third place finishers as well.
Yeah, I think we're kind of getting there with it. I think the biggest issue
that's helpful.
I agree. That does start, but, you know, I think then there's no more incentive to go second or third, though, because at that point, then you're just drawing for whatever else is left. So at least if you get to pick, you've got some kind of leeway to work with it. I think the one that's closest to it at this point that we have here is probably the Meadowlands for their races, the Meadowlands post formula thing. That does pretty well. That ensures, you know, a fifth place finisher is going to get post 10, or in this case, you know, a third or fourth place is going to get post 10. So at least that's kind of a good way. But again, I just kind of hate the idea of, especially Meadowlands, great example. do you want the rail or not? Some connections might love it. Some might hate it, you know? So again, if you just let people pick, then you can make your own choice. You know, if you won, you get the right to choose, take it or don't, your call, you know?
It's interesting. Last year, Vukafalos got to pick the sixth hole. I think he was picking ninth. Right. And they were really happy about it. And then it would, and it is by statistically the best post. And then he got a horrendous trip. So, I mean, who knows? Who really knows? Right. But just the way it kind of panned out. I mean, I think the owner before them picked the nine hole. So you'd always be happy to get the six over the nine.
I would say John Rawls makes a pretty good argument there. Not too earth shattering. I think with four eliminations, you know, we're going to see it again this year. We already discussed it here. When you have to fight for those positions in the finals, you're obviously going to get good elimination racing, as good as you're going to get, at least for elimination racing. And, you know, it's very competitive. Again, not to bash anything in particular, but right, I think, Mike, you alluded to it. You know, some of those Breeders' Crown Limbs last year where it was 12 horses entering, trying to get to 10 horse field, six for five, you know, for five, yeah, six horse field for five final spots. That's really tough racing to try to even contemplate figuring out, you know, what intents are, what anything else is. And again, especially with the way we do posts, very difficult to figure out. But
It affects handle. I mean, if you think about that, it you know, so that's another problem. I mean, so why not try to fix it and make it the best you can to make the handle what we wanted? And I mean, these are ideas for these guys that, I mean, you're on the USTA committee. I mean, what, you know, I mean, or on the board, like, yeah, these are things that that need to be discussed and fixed for the betterment of all. I mean,
And I also think there's a lot of discussion. You know what? That's true. I guess I got to remember that. That's the other hat I now wear, right, is the USTA Board of Directors member. You know, I think that's a lot of our sport is perception. And I will say, I think you agree, you know, to the outsiders, even Thoroughbred fans, everything else, I don't think it's even a great perception look if we're going to let this thing finish up the track fourth or fifth with people's hard-earned dollars on its nose last week. And then this week it jogs, you know, like it was 1-20. So I also worry about the perception of it, to be totally honest with you. I mean, if the three of us, knowing everything that could or will happen, want to bet our dollars on it, so be it. But for newcomers of the sport, trying to get in the sport, trying to understand the sport, I just think it's a bad perception look when you see a really, really conservative drive followed by, you know, an easy victory and a big money final to try to explain that to somebody. Oh, yeah, you better factor that in your handicapping. You know, you're not just trying to pick the best horse. You got to pick the horse that wants to win. But anyway, I digress. Race 7, we move on. Third and final North America Cup elimination, and another good field here, field of 9. Nijinsky is going to be our favorite. I think John Rallis said that's how he's paying for his Chanel bag. So, I guess.
No, that's how I'm paying for him, because I've been picking him, and I really like him, and I think that he's maybe the horse to beat now, especially given off of last week's win over Captain's Quarters. And that was a dominant performance. He's looked very good since he's turned 3 years old. Only one win at 2, but he was okay. I mean, he just had some quirks, and now he's starting to put things together. He came home sub 20. I mean, he's 25-2 on May 25th, and beat Funtime at Miami, who came back and just thrashed his division of the Sun Beach last weekend. So this horse is legitimate. I think that he's a lot more tactical. He has a massive kick. He's in a this elimination, I thought, came up pretty soft compared to the other two. I'm not trying to take away from these horses, but I just think that this is a better spot for him. He's perfectly drawn. He has to deal with Total Stranger on the outside, but I do think that Nijinsky should be able to handle these horses.
I sorry, Mike. Yeah, I misread that. John Rawls is saying there's now gonna be another Chanel bag there if he wins Saturday. What about the price though? Is it gonna be a half bag at this point, Mike? Are we getting concerned about the price continuing to drop based on what we've seen from him now? Is public?
Yeah, I probably have to dial it up. I mean, I would think, but this horse has been good to me so far, and you know, for me to we have a group chat. You know, John Rawls and Ryan Willis, and believe me, those two guys are fantastic horse players. So I don't really put much in there that I don't really think is going to be good. And you know, if I'm pushing that horse in the group chat, you know what I think of him. So,
well, here's the real question, Mike. Do we, if the price is shorter this week, do we double the bet to be able to afford a full bag, or do we just take our half bag for the week?
I may do that, because I do think that he's a slam dunk in this race.
Garnett, same opinion from you or something else?
Not quite as strong. I don't know if he's a slam dunk. He's the horse I picked to win, but I don't know. I don't know that Tall Dark Stranger's brother can't win this whole thing. Who knows? Look, he's just been a complete freak. He hasn't beaten anything. But, you know, when you come out your first start of the year and go 53-2, 120-2, obviously this is a completely different horse at three, completely different, right? But the way I kind of saw the race and the way I'm writing it up for DRF is there's a very good chance this could be total stranger in front and Nijinsky accepting a pocket trip and then chasing him down in the stretch. Mm-hmm. And that's I think there's a very good chance it could go like that. And I agree, you know, Mike's been on this horse and he's kind of convinced me, like he's, again, another horse, completely different and way, way improved horse at three, Nijinsky. But I wouldn't count out Nancy Tactor. You know, this horse's full brother won this race, and it was of the highest quality. And maybe it just took him to turn three to become, you know, what he's supposed to be. So I'm probably going to use them both in multi-race tickets. I don't know if there's any value in that really, but I might be looking for some prices elsewhere. But another horse I like a little bit here to get a piece of it is Better Is Nice. I think he probably makes the final. He's done nothing wrong this year. And again, you know, another horse that's obviously faster at three. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to work, but they don't all come back that good, right? So we'll have to see.
Yeah, you know, Total Stranger is one that I like quite a bit, and that's what John's comments referring to as Total Stranger. I like him quite a bit looking into the final, but I'm kind of curious to just kind of see this week, you know, again, elimination, see how he goes. I think he is probably pointed forward as he has been, but, you know, I remember, gosh, was it just last year or 2 years ago? I think it was just last year. Nancy Tactor started here like something like 20 for 35. It was this absurd number when she returned to the Meadowlands off the winter break. I mean, you know, she clearly has her horses really, really ready off of the winter break. And, you know, look, is there a class question? Absolutely. But I think assuming that Nijinsky takes all of that, the Mike Rabosi Chanel bag money, and he's as sure as we might hope he can be, I think the price can be worth taking a chance with a Total Stranger, not only in this elimination, but for sure, you know, obviously, as we say all the time with elimination racing, well, and you know, luckily, unlike the Elite Lop, these aren't all on the same day, so we can reassess and talk again on the show next week. But heading into next week's final, I think could be a potential interesting play to me. You know, we'll see how he draws, how the elim goes, everything else. But
what do you think his odds are here?
Well, I'll flip it back to you. What's Nijinsky's odds? Is he close to odds on? Is Nijinsky 4-5 even money?
Yeah, I don't. Probably. I mean, it depends. Depends on what the money the nine takes, right? I mean, that's the key.
So I think that automatically puts us at maybe 3-1. I'm going to say like even money in the Nijinsky post time. We're looking at like 7-2, 4-1. I think those morning lines are probably, I think the morning lines are right on Better Is Nice and Total Stranger. I think Total Stranger is just a notch below Better Is Nice, maybe 7-2, 4-1. I think where the morning line's off here is Nijinsky is going to be shorter. And as a result, some of those, you know, 15-1s are going to be like 60-1, you know, and that's where the money kind of evens out.
The problem is that who else is going to take money in the race? That's the problem. Like, it's those two, and I don't see anybody else that's taking a whiff of money in this race, and that's the problem.
I think Storm Shadow takes an inch of money based on the fact that he comes out of that Funtime Bayama Legendary Hand.
He was 46-1 last time.
Well, I think the line's correct, though. Who's your next choice if it's not him?
I don't know. That's the problem. I can't find any other horse to take money in here. Like maybe Better Is Nice. I could see him. He's taking money in three starts this year. I think he's the third choice in the race. I mean,
no, I agree with that. No, I'm one of the fourth choice at this point. Well, I guess what I'm trying to get to is I think those three take significant money. Nobody else really takes much money, but I think the fourth choice just by default, because you know, there's those players out there that are determined. They want to be Nijinsky. They're going to be Total Stranger. They're going to be Better Is Nice. Where are they going to go to next? I think it's going to be Storm Shadow. I'm not saying the horse has a great chance. I'm not saying the horse is going to be, you know, 6-1 or anything. But I think he's 10-12-1, 15-1, fourth choice. And then everybody else is bigger numbers. And again, I think if Better Is Nice and Total Stranger are truly 4-7-2, that's going to put Nijinsky like even money and everybody else takes their money, you know, points everywhere else. I don't know. John Rowell's in the chat. He's the morning line odds maker now at the Meadowlands. So I'm expecting him to jump in and give us some deep mathematical wisdom.
What's your morning line, John? Where you at?
But that's if I were making the line, as I've done in years past, that's how I would come up with this one. But Mike, what do you think? Again, obviously all very preliminary, and we'll be right back on this show next Wednesday to discuss, you know, after these elims and have a deeper thought. But any thoughts you have heading into the final at this point or things you're looking for, particularly this Saturday?
Well, I mean, I want to see how Legendary comes back. I think he's the key to a lot of the discussion. And if he is the way he was in May, then I think that he's top, very, very, very difficult to beat. But last week, you know, didn't really show us much. Obviously, I'm fond of Nijinsky, but this is a lion's den, and everybody's very good. They're fast, and it's going to be a trip race. It's not like that he's going to be a dominant, you know, kind of horse in there. I do think Clever Cody's interesting also. We'll see what Captain's Quarters does. You know, Captain Albano's another one. He looked, that was a really nice race May 26th at Philly. And, you know, he's, you know, he was a two-year-old champ. So it couldn't be coming in up any better. I think it's going to be a fantastic race. I'm just hoping that the main players make the final, and then, you know, we'll see. Put them, you know, put them behind there and turn them loose. Let's see.
Yeah, I mean, Garnett, you know, again, always caveated with, you know, I'm totally liable to change completely around next week after seeing the limbs. But my initial thoughts, now, I like Clever Cody to steal an elimination possibly. I don't think I like him in the final. I don't even think I like Captain Albano in the final. I don't really think I care for that first limb in the final. Again, see how it goes this week. Legendary Hanover, yeah, curious to watch him. Funtime Bama, I can't see myself going to him, but again, see how he races. I think the intriguing parts to me come to that last limb. Nijinsky has not sold me yet. Clearly, Mike, all of our doubters are making you great money. So, you know, I'll continue to. But we'll see how he might impress upon me for the final. And Total Stranger, alternatively, does he impress me or not for the final? And to be fair, alternatively, if Total Stranger is no good at this class jump and Better Is Nice is no good, Mike, the other thing to question, too, could be what Nijinsky really got out of this limb if he, you know, doesn't actually end up facing anybody. Because we've agreed those two are the clear second and third choices. If they're no good, there's a chance they aren't, then he really got to – either he hasn't faced anything yet, or alternatively, maybe he got a pretty easy limb and, you know, sets up well for the final. But, well, you know, fine. A lot of questions.
That's good.
A lot of questions to be answered between now and then, Garnett.
Yeah, listen, I don't really have any question marks about Legendary Hanover. He missed a week. He went to some beach somewhere. They went around the track. They finished in 52-1. They got second. They're happy to take home their $17,000 or whatever it was. He showed the week before what he can do. 26-53-4, 122, 148-3 on the front end. I mean, that's a winning mile in the final of this race most years. Mm-hmm. So I think he's going to show what he can do, and I don't have any doubts he's going to come back strong. And he's the one right now that I'm looking to win the whole thing. But like you said, I'm open to change my mind based on what I see Saturday for sure.
Well, look forward to seeing those races this weekend. And one last note before we turn the page on these limbs, Better Is Nice. John Rouse giving us the good details. A foot ailment to start three-year-old campaign. Bleeding issues 2 starts ago. Second time LASIX. Should be better.
Foot is feeling better. I don't know how John knows that. But keywords maybe the horse told him. He might have called him.
He asked the horse.
You know, has anybody ever actually done the statistical on this? I'm very determined anytime we get told something like this, oh, was dealing with an ailment, you know, should be better. Anytime anybody says that, don't they feel like they're usually not better more often than not?
I don't know.
Well, it's also a game of optimism, right? You always want to look for some reason why your horse didn't perform. And many times it's legitimate. I mean, if the horse is limping a little bit, it's got a foot ailment.
That's the other thing. I know, Garnett, I keep going back to Sweden, but I just got to say, speaking of that race that they stopped and then ran back later, they also are allowed to do whatever they want between those limbs. So some of these horses, they pulled shoes from for the first time around. So they added like some glue or like some, you know, boots to these horses. They added some head poles to the winner eventually. I mean, that's the other thing about this that's intriguing.
Big money race fed, you know.
Did they tell the betters about all this stuff in between?
Yes, we were on the feed trying to get all the information we could from the track, get it out there as best we could. But yeah, I mean, it was awesome. A lot going on.
Did you never watch Sweden, the broadcast?
Not recently, no.
Oh, wow. You got it. Yeah, it's really, really good, especially that weekend. I mean, it's really
good. Alternatively, Garnett, we know you're a good international traveler. You got to get to the Prix de Marique and the Elite Law, but those got to be, like, along with the Hamiltonian, like the three great races of the world.
For sure. Absolutely. Those are the three.
So we've got some eliminations further to discuss. The Fanhoen Hanover, three-year-old Philly Pacers, kind of the Philly equivalent of this race, the other three-year-olds. And Garnett, race 4, the favorite, does not particularly like the track you've got going on behind you there, given the last year's Breeders' Crown Final. But she qualified over it a bit ago and looked a little bit better.
Look, she's 10 for 11. Obviously, she's going to get bet for a reason. I want to beat her here. I want to beat her with the horse that beat her in the Breeders' Crown, my girl EJ, who was sensational at the end of last year, had a nice tightener over a sloppy track. I think she has to get sent here from the 7 hole by Dexter. I don't think she's going to get any kind of a conservative drive, so I'm going to try to beat her. But, you know, another filly I find interesting in here is Passline. She just got completely cooked in that gold race on May 25th. Louis Waugh decided he wasn't giving up the front, and you know, he got pushed to a 53-3 opening half, and she stopped. And now you get Jingra on the bike, right? And Jingra is probably going to look at these past performances and figure out a way to trip her out near the front. So, you know, for multi-race tickets, I'm going to have Passline on there because she's probably going to be in the 10 to 1 range. And she's never, you never get that kind of a price on her. And she's almost guaranteed to get a better trip than that one that I'm looking at. So, you know, I'm looking to try to beat Geocentric in this spot.
All right, Mike, pull up the receipts. I said it to you. I said it to Ray. I said it to Kevin Plaucha. I told you, Mike Roliche was going to be no good that race last time out. I liked Rocketdeo. The Fitness Edge, this week's a different story. This time it is Mike Roliche, I think, going to get it done here. And I think Geocentric, I don't know. There's still question marks for me. I know Ray talks about it, and I think Ray's correct about, you know, how weird and quirky kind of Hoosier is. I mean, we have seen some weird results on that track in Breeders' Grounds, it feels like. So maybe we should forgive that effort, but I don't know. It's just, you know, she looked fine in the 1-20 start that we see her win at the Meadows to start the year. But I just am willing to go against here. Also considering that you got to figure she's going to be a pretty short price. But, you know, my girl EJ could take some sneaky money. So, again, another race where I'm kind of curious to see where we're at post time. But assuming it's where I think it is, I'll take my girl EJ.
Okay, so looking at this race, just on the surface, there is a ton of speed in here. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous amounts of speed. You know, Geocentric wants the front. My girl EJ, you know, has proven that she likes to go forward. You know, some of these other ones, Odds On Stano, that's a horse that's been racing on the front end at 1-9 odds at the Meadowlands and those New Jersey Sire Stakes. And I realize this is a step up, but I'm sure that they're not going to duck with that one. Flawless is another one that's racing pretty well for Nancy Tactor. And so, but all like to be up close. Look at Passline last time, like Garnett said, 53-3 on the front. And Yannick, yeah, he sits with a lot. I mean, you know, so there's a ton of speed in here. I'm interested in closers. I'm interested in a horse like Reigning Jade, 25-4 kick last time. And that was, you know, against, you know, some boys there. You know, this is a much easier spot. And I realize this horse is up against it class wise, but top connections and a closer in a race full of speed. So you want to get 30-40-1 shots. You have to look at horses like this that are going to have a tactical edge over some of these other ones, despite the class edge of some of these ones, because they're, you know, they could take each other out. Another one I thought was interesting. What's the one doing in the race? Make Out With Me. I mean, that horse is a number's a two type, but Maneri's Barn's going great. This horse has proven that she can fly home. I don't mind these lines. You know that the horse is going to be coming at the end. So maybe to fill out a try or a super, I think the one's interesting. The six is very interesting. Maybe Geocentric's the best horse, but this is going to be a huge test. And it's early in the year. Some of these horses are coming off very minimal starts. They're going to fly early. So let's see what happens late. I like this race. I think it's very bettable. You beat some chalk in here. This early pick five could be massive. So this would be the race I would try to spread out and maybe catch a price.
Mike, all due respect to the horse and the connections, no due respect to Ray Catolo. You're starting to sound like Ray. You're going to really make an argument for this one to win at 99.
I'm not saying to win it, but I'm saying that this horse can hit the ticket. I mean, Maneri doesn't show up for no reason, and this horse is going to be coming from the back. So, I mean, last time was pretty good from way out of nowhere. You know, don't sleep on some of these closers in this race. You know, they go 53-3 again. Look out.
Well, I think you potentially could get the 1-6 both on the super ticket. I don't know if either's going to win, but you know that might be a way to play a race like this because they're both going to be huge prices.
I'm confident that I've talked the one into the winner's circle. So when I talk the one into the winner's circle, I'll put on a hot dog suit, and Ray Catolo and I'll do all of next week's show in hot dog costumes, and we'll see how that works out.
We don't want to cause any more problems, so let's just
doing that. While I'm bashing things that are said all the time in racing, that's another one said all the time. There's so much speed in this race, and then absolutely nobody leaves, and whoever does leave gets the lead and wins it. Just saying.
I don't know about that. Not in here.
Race 8, the other Fan Hanover elimination. Mike, morning line on this one goes to the far outside. It's a Love Thing, Caviar Bell, and Sarasota Hanover. All three of the favorites on the morning line, at least drawn 7-8-9.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the more competitive races that is going to happen too this weekend. And It's a Love Thing's been very good here. Really loves this racetrack. Has, you know, one that can kind of do it any which way. Wicked kick. I mean, just wicked. 25-3 all the time. She's just always ready to kind of pounce on a lot of those horses. This is a little bit tougher spot though. You got Caviar Bell in here. You know, that's a Grand Circuit type. So it's, I think an interesting race. I think Pass and Stowe's a pretty nice horse also. So I'm curious to see how it goes, what kind of trip that James is looking for It's a Love Thing. But I do think she'll be flying late. It's probably the outside too, but that's a good race.
Garnett?
I really like Caviar Bell here, I think mostly because of the post positions. I think I don't think James is going to abuse It's a Love Thing. He's going to know that if he gets in the final, he can win. You might get a drive similar to the SBOA elimination where she shows up just a little bit too late. One horse that intrigues me in here that paced a huge mile on May 25th was Odds on Platinum, who was first up in that race, in the race that It's a Love Thing won. That pass line was leading in 53-3, right? First up to 121-4 and only beaten a length by It's a Love Thing. You could do worse. You can find worse 20-1 shots on this night than this filly. Like, she's really improved, and that was a tremendous race first up. You know, if she gets on cover or you know, she's hidden on the inside and finds room in the stretch, I could see her toppling them all. So she's going to be on some of my tickets.
That's exactly where I'm going, Garnett. That's the price play for me on the weekend. I figure, you know, Belmont's over, everything else. This is the great, big, long shot get out for the day. Odds on Platinum. You know, again, not necessarily one that I love for the final, especially given how the draws may or may not work out. But Elimination Racing, Caviar Bell, especially It's a Love Thing, assuming they're both going to be coming from possibly off the pace, a little bit late. You know, never know. I would take a chance with Odds on Platinum. I thought a very big effort last time out against It's a Love Thing. Should be in front of this one, at least at the halfway point, let's put it that way, or you know, in the race. So we'll see how it goes from there. But I think at the price, going to be worth a shot with the inside post there for Odds on Platinum. But either way, a great weekend of racing coming up with by Mohawk this weekend. All the eliminations Friday, Saturday, next weekend's big day. Garnett, are you going to be on track for any of these nights?
I'm thinking about a potential strange triple header because they have breakfast with the babies in the morning. Then I could go back to Woodbine and sit with my thoroughbred cronies and blow a few hundred in the afternoon. And then I could go back to Mohawk for these eliminations. That's like me in my 20s before there was simulcasting. You had no choice but to go to the tracks. I might have to do that.
Yeah.
Mike, you're liable to show up anywhere. You can take a little drive up there?
I mean, no. But, you know, like some of us have jobs and, you know, can't always, like, you know, fire up every weekend. But, yeah, no, not this weekend. But I do got to get out to a couple spots. Definitely, I'm thinking Hambo this year, and we'll see. I mean, you're right. You never know where I'm going to pop up. Obviously, I'll be at the Adios. I mean, that's one that I'll definitely be at. So, yeah, I got to get to Mohawk soon, though. Especially if Garnett's pulling those triple headers. I mean, I think we could have a hell of a good time.
Yeah, right.
I'm looking forward to. I got to talk to Garnett about this afterwards. But I've got the great plan in mind here now. A good Saturday, Sunday, like three card experience. When we get to October, we're done racing Saturdays at the Yonkers. Fly up. I'm going to fly up early Saturday morning, catch some Woodbine Thoroughbred Saturday night, Woodbine Harness Sunday, back to Woodbine Thoroughbred, back down Sunday night. That's my tentative trip I've got planned there, Garnett.
Love it. Up, so.
Let's do it. Don't do it the weekend of October 6th because I'll be in Vegas on October 6th for my 60th birthday watching the Bills beat Houston in a sports book.
We'll go the week after that or the 2 weeks after that. We'll figure it out. And maybe I'll even join you back. That's always the amazing thing to me. For all the gambling I do, I've never been to Vegas. Never been to Vegas.
Never?
Nope.
Oh, my God.
Well, fly out.
A change.
That's Mike, when we go to Arizona this year for the symposium, let's take a day trip to Vegas first. Let's fly to Vegas.
You won't have to, you'll have to talk me into that.
Garnett, we were playing. We were in some Western Indian reservation Tucson casino, and Mike, how did you?
Yeah, he's sitting there betting $10 a hand. You know, he's betting $10,000 on a goddamn softball, but he can't play. You know, he's playing $5 blackjack in the casino.
And I profited like $300. Because I never sit in front of a table. I'm not that comfortable sitting in front of a live table dealer. But gosh, I think I made like $300 on that. And that was just $5 a hand, $10 a hand.
Unbelievable.
Anyway. All right. So we thank you as always for tuning into the Harness Players Podcast. We'll be back next week. I don't know, Mike, are we liable to say anything yet? Not Wednesday, 9 p.m. again? Let's go with it again. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll see. I got to look at my schedule, but we'll figure it out. Wednesday, I think, is probably a good bet for next week. Same bad time, same bad channel.
Tentatively Wednesday at 9 p.m. you'll see us on here. Tentatively, you'll see me, Mike, and Thomas Svensson for Sweden coverage first because we've got the big race at Boden in the Midnight Sun for the first half of the show. That you want to tune into. Then you probably want to leave because, Mike, I guess we're going to be forced to bring in, like, Ray Catolo or something. So,
oh, yeah.
Might want to slip out before.
Maybe we'll get Garnett to run it back, too, because that NA Cup's going to be – that'll be the main topic of discussion, I would think.
Yeah, Garnett, we might need you. Ray's going to cause international incident now with his hot dog costume. It stayed south of the border before. If he's on that show next week, it'll cause Sweden controversy. It'll cause Canada controversy.
It's amazing that the hot dog costume got us more exposure than anything else so far this year in the first 5 months of the year, right?
Well, he is a genius. So,
well, we will talk to you next week. Best of luck this weekend. Belmont Stakes Festival at Saratoga. These North American Cup eliminations, softball, baseball, whatever else you want to bet on. Hopefully, all your bets are winning one this week. And we will talk to you next week on the Harness Players Podcast.
Wow. Just in time. You hear my fire alarm going?